they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Our pleasure now to introduce our friend, Andrew Seidel. He's the VP of Strategic Communication with Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Also has a new book out called American Crusade, How the Supreme Court is Weaponizing Religious Freedom. Andrew, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me on again, gents. It's a pleasure.
Yes, Andrew, excellent. I'm taking the first question. How is the Supreme Court weaponizing religious freedom?
I mean, if you were paying attention over the last few weeks, you got a good taste of how the Supreme Court is well on its way to turning what was once this hallowed protection that allowed people to believe as they wanted and live as they wanted so long as they weren't harming others, and really turn it into a tool, a weapon of Christian privilege, Christian supremacy, and Christian nationalism. I mean, there are a number of cases that came down, everything from the case that overturned Roe versus Wade to the case where the court allowed a coach at a public school to impose his personal religion on other people's children, to the case out of Maine where the court said that taxpayers can be forced to fund religious indoctrination at Christian schools. So we are just well on our way along the road to theocracy here. It's an alarming time.
Andrew, the term religious freedom, like many terms that the right takes over, I think there's different definitions depending on who you ask. How do you define religious freedom?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great point, and especially now, basically, really starting with Trump, maybe even a little before, that term really got tortured and warped, which is part of the weaponization. They're turning it on its head. They do this kind of jujitsu move where something that was meant to protect minorities from the tyranny of the majority is now all of a sudden this tool of the majority to impose on the minority. And this is what I look at in the new book, American Crusade. We act like these questions are so difficult and so hard, and they're not. It's actually pretty easy and basic to draw these lines and answer these constitutional questions. The first line that we're going to draw when it comes to religious freedom is you have a right to believe as you want, and that belief is unlimited, but you don't have the right to act on that belief all the time. Right? Like the government can step in. If you say, well, God is telling me to kill you, the government can step in and say, hey, you actually don't get to do that. You might be able to believe it, but you don't get to do it. Right? Like, so somewhere along the spectrum of action that's motivated by religion, the government can step in and say, sorry, you don't get to do that. And that comes when we're talking about harming other people. That's really where we draw the second line. It's your right to swing your religion ends at the right, where the rights of others begin. It ends at the nose of other people, just as your right to swing your fist ends at their nose as well. These are not these questions that we make into these hard Supreme Court cases. And then we see the facts twisted and tortured. Really religious freedom now has come to mean that baker in Colorado who can deny service to a gay couple because his God said so. Or the right to put up a 30-foot tall Christian cross on government property and then force taxpayers to maintain it. There's a lot of good studies now that are coming out that show that the meaning of religious freedom has changed depending on who is using the phrase and who is hearing the phrase.
Andrew, of course, in these examples, it always favors Christianity. It's religious, freedom for Christians. Right. And I perceive myself to be a Christian, rah-rah for my team, I guess. But, the example that I had always seen, the Christ example, was helping out the poor and being a peaceful human being and turning the other cheek. But you talk about the white nationalism and what actually is motivating them. Well, it ain't Jesus Christ, whether you think he's fact or fiction. They're not acting in a Christ-like fashion. So let me take the conversation that way, if I could. Tell us what the white nationalist movement is.
Well, I mean, really, There's an overlap of a number of different movements that we're seeing. I mean, if you take January 6th, for example, and look at kind of all of the disparate groups that were there on January 6th, you had the QAnon groups, you had the militia groups and the Second Amendment folks. You had this kind of wide swath of the right, I'll say, and they were united under the banner of white Christian nationalism, really. And that is, we're seeing, Marjorie Taylor Greene a couple of times, for instance, this week, talking about white Christian nationalism and Christian nationalism and how they should adopt that label and be proud of that label. But if you're looking at the overlap between white nationalism and Christian nationalism, it's pretty, if that were a Venn diagram, it's getting pretty close to a circle. And it really is an important caveat on the Christian nationalism altogether. I think one of the things that people don't realize is Christian nationalism is an attempt to codify the privilege of a class that is shrinking demographically, right? Conservative, white, Christian, heteronormative men, right? And they are used to a certain amount of power and privilege and not being criticized for saying and doing the things that are very worthy of criticism. And they have seen that shrinking in recent years. The adoption of Christian nationalism, the wave of Christian nationalism that has been crashing over the country in the last 5 years, is a deliberate pushback on that loss of privilege.
Marjorie Taylor Greene had to say, I am being attacked by the godless left because I said I'm a proud Christian nationalist. These evil people are calling me a Nazi because I proudly love my country and my God. The left has shown us exactly who they are. They hate America, they hate God, and they hate us. We don't hate you, our fine guest, Andrew Seidel, VP of Strategic Communication with Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Andrew, you're going to stick around for one more segment, at least a little bit into that segment. We got a few minutes
absolutely,
with you.
Absolutely.
All right, folks, you stick around as well. Doug Mastriano has a consultant on his campaign team. He apparently is the owner of Gab, and he went off on Jews and atheists. I want to play a little piece of that and get your reaction, Andrew, as well as our audiences. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I need you white people that thing. Mm-hmm. You know how y'all do.
Sixty % of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day Edition. Got a fine guest. He stuck around. Andrew Seidel, VP of Strategic Communications with Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and author of the new book, American Crusade, How the Supreme Court is Weaponizing Religious Freedom. Andrew, thanks for sticking around. Let's get back to those violent white nationalist insurrectionist bastards. The movement itself, is it a movement predicated on violence, or is violence just the means to the end?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It is growing ever more violent and bold as it is unchecked, essentially. One reason that the consequences are so very important for some of what we've seen over the past few years. It is truly alarming. And if you look at the run-up to the January 6th insurrection, I helped spearhead and write a couple sections of a report that cataloged the role that Christian nationalism played in that January 6th insurrection. The rhetoric that they are using is being dialed up more and more and more to where violence is essentially inevitable. I mean, they're talking about this as warfare. And if you believe that your chosen candidate was chosen by God to rule the United States, right? The only thing that makes sense then, if you believe that truly, is that the election was stolen. And the only way to fight back against that is to actually fight back against that. I mean, that is why this is Christian nationalism is such a threat to a Republican form of government to the United States of America, to a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. I've been screaming this now since at least 2019, and you know, finally people are starting to wake up and realize what a serious threat Christian nationalism is to our country.
And were the precursors, Andrew, things like the Ku Klux Klan? I mean, we've seen other organizations predicated around sort of this warped Christianity. And, you know, again, it's not whether you believe in Christ or not, the examples of Christ are not what these people follow. They look at a guy like Donald Trump, who's clearly blasphemous, has never read the Bible, none of those things. But he's their vessel. He provides for them the godlike vessel, the godlike being whatever they perceive God's will to be. Trump was delivering that for them. So, I know I'm kind of mismashing some thoughts here, but Andrew, can you help clarify my thoughts for me?
Let me jump into your brain and see what I can do.
Good luck with that, Andrew.
I think I understand the impulse to say this isn't Christian. This isn't my Christianity. I get that, but I think it also misses the point to a certain extent to say that this isn't real Christianity, because that is kind of beside the point. Christian nationalism is an entire identity that is based on disinformation and myths and lies, especially about the founding of the United States of America and what it means to be an American. You know, one of the things that they are trying to do is claim, and really the entire ideology is centered around this claim, this is why we call it Christian nationalism, that America was founded as a Christian nation. And at its most basic level, what it is trying to do is rewrite our history so that it can redefine what it means to be an American. So that to be an American is to be a Christian, and to be a Christian is to be an American. Or, to be more accurate, and what you're getting at is that true Americans, TM, are conservative white Christian men, right? And the point of staking out that ideological group and that identity is that it's saying that this nation, America, belongs to that group and no other. And that is the truly sinister and really evil aspect of this claim. They are trying to rewrite the American identity to privilege themselves. And then, with the help of the Supreme Court, as we discussed already, they're going to rewrite the law accordingly.
Oh, even Manifest Destiny back in the 1800s, right? I mean, the justification to expand west because God wants us to be from sea to shining sea. And certainly people had those thoughts, but that is a different perspective than the creation of this country. Andrew Seidel, VP Strategic Communication, Americans United for Separation of Church and State. I want to play for you, if I may, just under 2 minutes of Andrew Torba. He's with the Gab social network. He's also apparently a consultant with Doug Mastriano, and he has said some very terrible things. I want to get your reaction and perhaps some ideas on how to counter this ideology. If you would, please, Evan, play cut number one.
Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene is also coming under attack. She is getting loud with the explicit Christian nationalism, and I love to see it. This is great stuff.
Wow.
So on the Cat Turd podcast, she said the GOP is the party of Christian nationalism and that Christian nationalist policies serve everyone. She's absolutely correct, okay? Me loving my neighbor is wanting my neighbor to be ruled by wise, biblical Christian men. Why? Well, look at the fruits. Look at the fruits of what happens when we allow pagans, Jews, non-believers, atheists to run our country, okay? What happens? What is the fruit of that? Well, the fruit of that is massive inflation, a border invasion, billions and billions of dollars being sent to foreign countries, a suicide epidemic in this country, deaths of despair, fentanyl deaths skyrocketing, and just this laundry list of stuff, okay? So this is what happens when non-believers are in positions of power and run our government. What happens when Christians are in positions of power and run our government and run our media and run our education system? Well, you get what we've seen in the United States of America and across Europe well, across Europe for thousands of years, across America for, you know, the first 200 years or so of our founding of this nation, which is the fruit of exceptionalism and of freedom and of liberty and of wealth. That is what happens when you have biblical, wise, Christian, biblical leadership that is running the country. It benefits everybody, okay? This is just the reality of the situation. So me loving my neighbor is wanting my neighbor to be ruled by Christians, biblical, wise Christians.
I don't want to be ruled by anybody, Andrew, let alone Christians. But what's your reaction to that? Again, this is a Gab CEO. He's on and consulting with Doug Mastriano. What's your reaction, and what's the best way, in your opinion, sir, to counter this thought process?
Yeah, I mean, what a toxic mix of ignorance and arrogance. And boy, have I got a book that guy should read. That was a pretty clear synthesis of Christian nationalism. You had all the disinformation about American history and how America is exceptional because of that fallacious history, none of which is accurate or true. And you have him clearly stating that Christian nationalism is meant to favor people like him, conservative white Christian men. And again, you know, I mean, to take it back to what we were discussing at the outset with this Supreme Court, right, and weaponizing the concept of religious freedom, we tie it all up in a bow because the conservative justices on the Supreme Court are reforging religious freedom as a weapon for Christian nationalists, so that there is this in-group which the law protects but doesn't bind, and everybody else is an out-group which the law binds but doesn't protect. And that's what you heard right there in that, I mean, just in that just awful bigotry.
Now, this, again, a consultant to a major, you know, political candidate, a Republican here in this country in these times today. What messaging, though, Andrew? I mean, can we actually counter with? Is it just, hey, you got to go get Seidel's book and you know, read up on these things? I mean, from a political standpoint, what's the best counter to the ignorance and the vitriol?
Yeah, in your opinion, sir. That's a really good question. I mean, first of all, groups like Americans United for Separation of Church and State are fighting against Christian nationalism, have been on the front lines battling this for some time, for a long time before most people realized that Christian nationalism was this threat. So I would really encourage people to go give to groups like Americans United, AU.org, join up. We need all the help we can get. And we really are, I think, in actually what we might call a great awakening in this country, in that people are finally, we've taken for too long the separation of church and state for granted in this country. And after this past Supreme Court term and what the court has done and the emboldened Christian nationalism that we are seeing right now, people are finally waking up to the threat that it poses and to the danger of living in a country without that separation between church and state. And what we really need as a country is a national recommitment, because the separation of church and state cuts across every single progressive issue that most people care about, whether it's abortion rights, reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights. I mean, even things like voting and the environment. Separation of church and state levels the playing field and ensures freedom without favor and equality without exception. And what we really need today is a national recommitment to the separation of church and state.
Andrew, I know you got to run today. It's 4:44. I want to give you a heads up. Any final thoughts, anything you want to share with our audience as we wrap up this interview?
I'd love for people to go pre-order American Crusade. It comes out next month. I'm really excited about it. If you are struggling to understand what is happening right now and to make sense of all of this, as we've just been struggling on.
I'm struggling.
I'm telling you, the book doesn't offer all the solutions, but it really does help out. And then please go join Americans United, AU.org. We need all the help we can get right now, truly.
Andrew Seidel, VP of Strategic Communications with the aforementioned Americans United for Separation of Church and State. New book coming out, as he mentioned. Andrew, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for coming around. Good to see you again.
Thank you, gents. Really appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates, and I was a busy, busy booker. We have another guest coming up shortly. His name is Scott Thompson with Law Forward. Law Forward has filed a lawsuit after Wisconsin Supreme Court absentee ballot decision. Some disabled people had some issues with that. Law Forward is going to address that. A little bit here from the Washington Post. Four disabled people are asking a federal judge to ensure they can vote this fall after the Wisconsin Supreme Court limited how absentee ballots can be cast. And I got to tell you, I'm going to be off this Friday. My mother, she's getting older, not doing too well. She's in a senior living facility. We're going to move her to the same facility, but a different building for the memory care. She's slowly getting a little worse and worse. And she can't really get around much on her own anymore. She certainly can't drive, can't get into a car, can't do one of those things. Has to have a walker or a chair to move. And so these things matter, and not just necessarily for disabled folks, but for elderly folks like my mother. What are her options right now if she decided to go vote in the primary? I can't, apparently, according to current law, I am unable to bring her ballot to the drop box to her polling place for her. So would I have to get her in the Jeep? and bring her down there by herself at, 77 years old and hardly able to get around? This is the answer? That's much of an answer.
What about the indefinitely confined? Like Rebecca Playfish apparently voted during the pandemic. What about that? Is that still exist? I can't imagine it does, but... you can't keep up with every ruling of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. You really can't. Because they're not really in it for expansion of voting. You know what I'm saying? They don't want you to vote.
Doug. Well, isn't that
or grandma,
really
or
isn't
ma.
That really, really the case? That's the case.
Be a good son. Help your mama vote. Tell her not to vote Republican. Will you discourage that? She's not a Trumpster, is she?
She did not vote in the last election. She decided to do so. I don't know if she voted for Trump or not, honestly. I did tell her that I was going to deprogram, take Fox News off of her cable. So she hasn't been watching it a whole lot. I didn't take it off. I'm sure it's still there. But she's been watching sports lately, which is great. Keep the mind active. Keep yourself entertained. Folks, we will keep you entertained. Scott Thompson from Law Forward coming to join us next. Stick around.
Mama ever listened to this fine program?
She certainly should.
Race baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot.